It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a quick heads up on our programming. Join us this evening for a special report with our partners at PBS Wisconsin. We hear from Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates Daniel Kelly and Jill Karofsky ahead of the state's April 7th primary. And then we join here and now for a recap of this week's news in Wisconsin. That's tonight at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. The Strategic National Stockpile is the government reserve that's meant to fortify overwhelmed hospitals in a crisis. And in recent days, we've learned about a drastic shortage of ventilators. Are you a healthcare worker, a medical provider, a COVID-19 patient, or federal employee on the front lines of this pandemic? We want to hear from you right now, 800-642-1234. Caroline Chen is a healthcare reporter at ProPublica. Her latest reporting on the coronavirus focuses on medical stockpiling and how the federal government is handling a shortage of supplies. Caroline, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So I understand you live in New York City. Can you help us understand what it's like there right now? What are you seeing and hearing?
Yeah, so unfortunately, New York City, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, has been hit particularly hard by the outbreak at this point in time. I personally am safe and well. I'm just staying at home doing all of my reporting from home. So I mostly just go out pretty late at night for walks, which is, it's pretty strange to do that, because I go out late at night and there's no one around, and I'm like, I don't want anybody to be around when I go out for walks, but then it's pretty strange to be going around my neighborhood, which is usually incredibly bustling, to have it be completely empty. But I spend a lot of time talking to frontline workers, in the course of my reporting, and just, talking to a lot of folks in New York City, and just hearing how overwhelmed they are is really making me sad and worried for the frontline medical workers, particularly in New York, because they are really being slammed. And I think that just increases the urgent need for everybody to do their part to stay home and flatten the curve. And I think also is a bit of a preview, perhaps, for other cities in particular around the United States.
New York City hospitals, your hospitals in the city are just have a shortage, an extreme shortage of medical supplies and equipment. Tell us about the Strategic National Stockpile. What is the stockpile?
Yeah, so the Strategic National Stockpile is managed by the federal government, by the Department of Health and Human Services, and it is a stockpile of medical equipment, which includes everything that every state currently is short of. So that is people will keep hearing the term PPE. That is short for personal protective equipment, and that includes masks, gowns, and gloves. So that is stuff that is in the national stockpile. Stockpile also has things like ventilators, which every state wants at this point as well. And so the difficult thing that the federal government is now doing is it's fielding requests from every state at the same time that is all asking for more PPE, more ventilators, more of everything, and trying to decide how to allocate the stockpile.
Yeah, and not just ventilators. It's masks and gowns and gloves and these respirators. So there is a lot on the list.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that is unusual about this particular outbreak, and I think hard for anybody to have planned for, I was talking to an ER doctor in the Midwest who is saying, prior to this outbreak, she would maybe gown up fully a few times a year, when they encountered a patient who they thought might have tuberculosis. For COVID-19, because some of the symptoms could look like a patient who has the flu, and at this point in time, there isn't a rapid test that can be done, in, say, under an hour. And as everybody knows, testing has been an issue where, now testing is ramping up, but it has been sort of the slow start. So they've had to treat pretty much any patient that has flu-like symptoms as if they could be a COVID patient. So they're just going through PPE at a rate that they just never could have imagined. And so she says she's going through PPE, in massive amounts that she could never have planned for. So then if you imagine like one person is going through unimaginable amounts of PPE, and then you multiply that by every ER doctor, plus now all these hospitals who have patients pouring in, multiply that by every state, it becomes really staggering amounts.
Exponential. Yeah. I'm wondering, how do you dispose of the PPE once it's been used? Is it hazardous waste? Can it be recycled in any way or reused?
That's a great question. I'm not sure that exactly how it needs to be disposed. I believe you can just sort of like treat it like, put it in a trash bag and tie it up. I think I haven't
Yeah.
done a lot of reporting specifically into that. But to your question of reusing, the respirator, the N95 masks, those are designed to be used and disposed. Unfortunately, now we have heard reports from all across the country by healthcare workers, by nurses who are being told that they have to reuse their N95 masks. And a lot of them are being told, you get one mask a day, you get a brown paper bag. So, like when you leave a patient's room, you've got to carefully take it off. And, you've got gloves on, you take off your mask, you put it in the brown paper bag that has your name on it. And, you've got to reuse that mask again for the rest of the day. And if you do it super, super, super carefully, theoretically, it's not going to be recontaminated. But, normally these nurses and doctors are used to, leaving a patient's room and just discarding it. And now they have to preserve that precious mask because supplies are so low. So this is just giving them so much anxiety
And I can
because
imagine
they, have to
too,
hang on to it.
yeah, I can imagine too that, I mean, they usually are just flying in and out of rooms. Things can move very quickly in hospitals, but having to put on all of this equipment or preserve the equipment, that must be really slowing down response times.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And all of this is just adding more pressure to them when they want to go in there quickly to help someone, and they really have to like slow down, gear up, and be careful because they don't want to be infected.
Talking with Caroline Chen of ProPublica, who produces investigative journalism. She's re been reporting on the ventilator sh shortage and following how medical professionals are responding to COVID-19 across the country. You can join in with your questions about PPE, 800-642-1234. Have you found a donation site because you had PPE at home or your business? How did that go with your hospital? Were you able to drop it off? What is your hospital situation like if you're in the medical field and you work in a clinic or hospital? Do you have enough supplies? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Caroline, how are federal officials deciding which states receive what materials? What is the rationing looking like?
Yeah, so my colleagues and I did some reporting around this, and when we were publishing a story last week, HHS told us that what they're doing for now, and this may shift with time as they adapt, is for the stockpile, they've divided it up into 25, 25, 50. So 25% of the stockpile is going out right now according to population size. Another 25% is being strategically sent to states that have severe outbreaks or might be used for special needs, such as, if you have a cruise ship that's being brought in to your state and docking at your state, so you might have a little extra need. So that 25% is being sort of sent out strategically. And then the last 50% is being held back right now in what they're calling strategic reserve, which could be used later on if there is a huge spike in critical needs around the country. And we found that out because we had started out by hearing that Florida had asked for, sent in their request, and then they got everything that they wanted, 100%. And then Oregon had sent in a request, and they had only gotten back 10%. And we were like, well, is that fair? It sounds unfair on the face of it. But then as we dug in a little bit more and we looked at the letters that these states were getting back, it seemed that what they were getting back was basically a pro rata calculation based on population size, where they were basically just being told, we've done this calculation, what you're getting back is based on your population size. So is this the best way to allocate supplies at this point in time? I think it seems like HHS is doing its best. I think one of the tricky things is that in some states that still don't have great testing, they might feel like, well, even if we have a smaller population, what if we have a lot of cases?
Like what's happening in New Orleans, for instance.
Right. So then does that second 25%, you know, where they say that that's going to be sent strategically to cases, does that help make up for that? I think this is, it's hard to do this perfectly. And I think that at the end of the day, it was interesting to us that like no state was satisfied, you know, even the states that, you know, Florida got everything that they wanted in the first round, they immediately sent out a second request.
Yeah, like no mathematical formula can really make sense of what is happening right now in terms of who can get what.
Yes. And Florida's response to us was like, yeah, we got everything we wanted in our first go. We just sent out a second request for much, much more because it's definitely not enough. And so, you know, really the feeling we've gotten having done reporting is that across the board, nobody has enough.
Mm. Caroline Chen stays with us. She's a ProPublica healthcare reporter examining how the coronavirus is affecting our nation's stockpile of emergency supplies. Doctors and nurses, what is it like on the front lines of this pandemic? What extra measures are you taking to protect yourself? How quickly are you going through PPE? Share what you're experiencing, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll talk more with Caroline Chen in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Strategic National Stockpile, it was started in 1999 primarily to prepare for attacks against Americans using weapons of mass destruction. So it was once an obscure government initiative, and today it is front and center in the national spotlight as state officials search for every available PPE, ventilator, you name it. Were you recently released as a patient, or perhaps you're in the hospital now? What's the atmosphere like? What is the workload like for physicians and nurses? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Caroline Chen, a healthcare reporter for ProPublica, who is based in New York City, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Steve is with us from Waukesha. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just reporting that our son is an ER doc in the Denver area, outlying suburb, if you will, and they are already reusing masks. They have one mask for the entire day, and then they're turned back in and re-sterilized and redistributed the next day. And you know, this is at a point where, you know, it hasn't gotten quote unquote serious, you know, so I can't imagine what it's going to be like, you know, when the caseload really starts ramping up.
Caroline, what do you know about sterilizing these masks after they've been used?
Yeah, I think this is one of those many desperate measures that I have heard of around the country that is being that's being tried and being done. And I think, unfortunately, this is one of those things where it's happening, and it's just so different from what healthcare workers are used to, you know, where they used to just throw away these masks once they left a room without a second thought.
Yeah. Steve, thank you for the call. Let's bring in Kelly now in Milwaukee. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I work for a home care agency in Milwaukee, and we have a crew of volunteers who are making masks out of bed sheets. They're usually four layers thick of bed sheets. There's a lot of patterns going around on the internet or even through Pinterest. But I would have, if people have sewing machines at home, they have access to some old bed sheets that are in good shape, and they can get some of the, they're really simple supplies, but those will go a long way to helping people that are out on the front lines trying to provide the care.
Kelly, thanks. Caroline, can these be made at home?
Yeah, so I think it's one of those like better than nothing situations. You know, it really kind of shook me about a week ago when the CDC actually put out guidelines on its website that said, you know, as a last resort, if there are no available masks, that healthcare providers can use a bandana or a scarf, which I think actually was that moment that kicked off a lot of these drives for people to start sewing masks. And I really am appreciative of all these people who are pulling out their sewing machines. And obviously, just to be clear, a homemade mask is not going to provide the same level of protection as an N95 mask for a healthcare provider. But I think what the hope is at the hospitals is to be able to give the N95 masks to the healthcare providers who are in the most high-risk situations, you know, the people who need to do intubations for patients. That's when the greatest chance of risk is, because those types of procedures release the most aerosols. And so if they can, that's what they're trying to do right now, which is give the highest level protection mask to the healthcare providers who are at the highest amount of risk. And then the nice thing about these homemade masks is that, you know, you're not having to have any healthcare provider makeshift their own mask with a bandana, you know? Mm. We don't want anybody having to do that. These homemade masks that people are making, at least they have, you know, multiple layers. They have elastics with ear loops, you know? So a lot of drives are happening at home right now where they're being made and given to people in the front lines so that, you know, if at least they're in a lower risk environment, they have a comfortable mask that they can wear around in the wards.
We're talking with Caroline Chen, a healthcare reporter at ProPublica. She's following how medical professionals across the U.S. are dealing with the coronavirus and the supplies issue. Your questions about PPE are welcome, 800-642-1234. Bob from Madison called in and wanted to say that other countries are testing more often. People are being tested whenever they walk into grocery stores. And Bob says we should be taking steps like that to get the virus under control. Caroline, where are we at with testing more widespread?
I think we're still in a ramp-up phase right now. And I think, again, this is a supply issue. You know, when we started out, I would say maybe about a month ago now, our shortage had to do with the available actual tests. Early on, we were just limited to the tests made by the CDC. And now, actually, the FDA has approved a great number of tests made by a number of different manufacturers. There was a point where actually we didn't have a shortage of test kits, the actual tests themselves, but there was a shortage of what's called an RNA extraction kit, because you need to take the RNA off of the sample before you can run it on the actual test. So there was like this bottleneck of the step you had to do before you could run the test, which was very frustrating because we had all these tests that we could use, but we couldn't take the RNA off. So that bottleneck has now been cleared. But the current bottleneck is actually there's a shortage of nasal swabs in the country, because we need the swabs to take the samples out of the patients. So it's really been this frustrating kind of whack-a-mole of one shortage then another. And I think the main factory that makes the nasal swabs that are used in the country is a factory in Italy, which has been part of the problem. And so, you know, one, it's both frustrating, but actually I think on a more hopeful note, I've seen a lot of innovation. So one of the newest tests that has been approved by the FDA, I think last week, doesn't require the nasal swabs. You can just use what's called nasal aspirate, which is a more polite word for nasal snot, basically.
Okay.
So they can collect that without needing a swab at all. But still, it's been this sort of slow ramp up process. So the short answer is we are getting more and more tests, but we're basically a few weeks behind where we would really like to be.
You mentioned their supplies in Italy. Let's look at China for a moment, because Hubei province, where Wuhan is preparing to emerge from a 2-month lockdown. How has that situation contributed to what we're seeing in our current medical supplies in the U.S.?
You know, I think this is another just stepping back and looking at the really big picture here is I've talked to a lot of hospital administrators who have said in all of their planning and contingency planning, to the extent that they've done it, they had never imagined a scenario where all of their suppliers either had shut down themselves or were competing with them for all the supplies, which is in China. And I think it's that has added to the difficulty of the U.S. in getting supplies. And I think one of the things that I have seen in some interviews is that even though China has successfully, really successfully managed to bend their curve and bring down their caseload, is that local officials are not relaxing, really. There was an interview that was done with a WHO official who led the mission to China. This is Bruce Alward, and this is an interview in Time, which you can find online, where he said he was interviewing local officials in China and asking them what they're going to do now. And it really struck me that the response that he said he heard on the ground was, well, we're buying more beds and ventilators because they are worried and expecting that the coronavirus is not gone.
That there will be another wave. Yeah.
That there could be another wave, and they want to be prepared. And honestly, I think that's smart that you don't just relax. What that says to me is that it's not like there's going to be a flood of available supplies for the U.S.
Caroline, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Caroline Chen, a healthcare reporter at ProPublica. Coming up, we talk with Wisconsin's chief medical officer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.